Sion,
La Colle-les-Yvelines,
Saint-Denis,
Boulogne-sur-Mer,
Clermont-Ferrand,
Lyon,
Giverny,
Angers,
Arles,
Périgueux,
Annecy,
Savigny-sur-Orge,
Landivisiau,
Paris,
Perpignan.
Pour la nouvelle
Normandie.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the Kenyan Francophile, or what I'd like to think of as the trial episode, because I'm so new to podcasting. The main reason I'm doing this podcast is because if you know me, you know I have a blog, which I haven't touched for probably close to a year. And I would have really wanted to document my life in France on my blog, but I didn't. I stopped being excited about writing. I don't know what happened along the way, but it happened. So we move to the next, you know, we just move. That's how life goes. One day you'll be excited about something, next day you're not. And that's fine. Because I remember my friend asked me, okay, you say you want to start a podcast, so what happens to your blog? I mean, I don't know. It just stays. And then if I ever get excited about writing again, I'll go back to my blog. That's fine. And we, the same friend, we discussed and we both agreed that people don't read as much blogs these days. And people actually listen to a lot of podcasts and YouTube content these days. So we also move with the times. That's another reason. And also plus the fact that the program I did, which I'm going to talk about, which is going to be the center of the next couple of episodes in this podcast, Assistant Dolong, doesn't have enough representation online. Like, there's not much Kenyan content. If you Google the program, you will find a lot of American, European experiences. Not to say there are no Kenyans who have documented their journeys, there are. Shout out to Joy Frida, who was also a motivation in creating this content and who was the one person whose channel I watched religiously when I was preparing for the program. And a huge part of this podcast, I mean, this not just the whole podcast, but like the first episode of the podcast, which will be focusing on Assistant Dolong, will be to help the guys who are preparing for the program to know some things that I wish somebody told me before I left. Either to dispel some misconceptions about France and the French, or to just share our experiences on this podcast. I will be having a couple of guests over to share their varied experiences, because I know my experience in itself is not the whole representation of how the life there is. Yeah, it varies a lot, especially depending on where you are. It's very different. And most people, when you mention France to most people, the one thing that comes to their mind is Paris. It's actually so funny, because even many months into the program, even people who are, I would consider, close friends of mine and I've talked to about this thing for so long would still ask me, hey, so how's Paris? How's Paris? And I don't know. I'll be like, I don't know how Paris is. I'm not in Paris. But you understand with time that most people just only know Paris. And a few people who are ardent football fans know of some cities that are football cities, which is great. We'll also dive into the culture shocks, especially what we expected versus what we found in France. It's quite a lot. I think France is not as rosy as many people think. Maybe it's a matter of perception, but like, you know how social media is. Everything is filtered to make it seem dreamy and like the life, but it's not really that way on the ground for the most part. So, I mean, the pictures you see on social media don't tell the full story of what the experience is. So I hope this podcast goes a long way in giving people, anybody interested in the French life or France, or just anyone who's curious for whatever reason, I hope this podcast goes a long way in giving you a deeper insight in the life of a French person or somebody visiting France. And not just about France, because we'll also be covering matters around the French language. As Kenyans who are learning the language, and that's why the podcast is called The Kenyan Francophile. I hope you enjoy. I did a couple of Q&As on my social media and I got a couple of questions and I tried to group them into different sections to answer them. First of all, before I go there, I must say this has taken me so long to do. I have planned to do this podcast for what, like 4 months now? And this is, it's now September. Wait, it's August. It's mid-August. And this is now when I am planning. I'm starting the first episode. A lot of it has been because of feeling like I'm not in the right mood to do this. You know, blogging was a lot easier because even the times that I was at, especially then, did I actually write better. Because I feel like writing requires some sort of emotion. I don't know. But for this podcast, I always felt like I was not in the right mood to do it. And even when I was, I just, you know, imposter syndrome and all that, and feeling new to it and feeling like, ah, oh, there's so much work to be done and editing. But I'm glad I'm finally recording this. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll just learn along the way. Okay, so who am I? Oh, just to introduce myself. I thought I had done that in the beginning. My name is Tara Kadeni. I am a telecommunications graduate and I am a language assistant in France, in Montpellier, the city of Montpellier, which is in the south of France. I have done this program since 2021 and I'm on break for my first term and I'm going to do my second term in September. I think that's as much as I can say. The first question that I got, obviously, was what is ADL stroke TAPIF? So ADL stands for Assistant de Langue, which means language assistant in French. And TAPIF, which is mainly the American version, stands for Teaching Assistant Program in France, both of which are abbreviations for the same program. So Assistant de Langue or TAPIF is a mobility program, an annual mobility program where the government of France partners with several other countries. Kenya is one of them, and a couple of other countries. There's Ghana that I'm aware of. There's also South Africa, I think. America. There's a lot of countries. There's Spain. I can't mention all of them right now, but there's a lot of countries that the government of France partners with to have French speakers come and teach their native language while sharing their culture. So it's like a cultural exchange program and you get to interact with students and teach them your language. So I and other Kenyans teach English. I taught in primary and I taught in elementary actually, but there's people who teach in college and lycée. So the program typically starts in October and extends up to around May. I will share my experiences on the same in a few, and you'll also get to hear experiences from people who taught in different levels just to compare the same. The selection process was also a question I was asked. How is the selection process and how is the interview? Selection goes on from around September all the way to around mid or to around March. Depending, you know, it depends. During my year, there was the pandemic, so everything took a little longer than it should have taken. So it really just depends. But that's the general time frame. And the requirements of the program are the Kenyan requirements, that is, because I'll be sharing the Kenyan experience. The first requirement is for you to be a Kenyan citizen and be in university at the time of application. And then there was also a requirement to be between 21 to 35 years old and have at least the B1 level of French proficiency. Because I was asked this before, just to clarify, in my year they didn't really ask for B1 certificates, but I think there's a year that people were asked for it. If I'm not wrong, this last year guys were asked for B1 certificates. But it really just depends. You know, you can have a B1 certificate and you can't speak. There's nothing to show for it. And you cannot have a B1 certificate and you can actually speak and express yourself in a manner that is even beyond B1. So it's just about how you prove yourself. It's quite fair if you ask me, because B1 is quite low on the scale. And just to add another question to this that I was asked before, do you need to speak French? Yes, you do. Even if the program didn't require you to speak French, I don't see how you would survive in France for that long without the language, because French people don't really speak English. That is one thing I didn't know, that they don't really speak English. They don't, most of them don't know English. The English they know is very little that they've heard probably from movies or songs. And this is like the general, like generally, but like you can find in big cities like, let's say, Paris or Lyon, Bordeaux, whatever. You can find in the bigger cities, some of them won't be French people because there's people from all over the world there. But some of them would just be French people who learned the language in whatever way. Maybe they studied abroad or, you know. But generally, English is not spoken in France. They really pride themselves in speaking their language. It's so strict to the point that there was a point, there was a petition made by the Académie Française, whose Kenyan equivalent would be, I guess, Tuki. Although I'm not too sure there's a Kenyan equivalent, because they are the guardians of the language. It's an institute that safeguards the language and decides the rules for the language. So, for instance, like when COVID-19 came, and you see how French has genders, Lola, it is them who decided that that COVID is femina, and it's la COVID and not le COVID. So, l'Académie Française made a petition to ban foreign languages in public spaces. They were suggesting there shouldn't be like English words or Spanish words written in public. So that's it's quite extreme. It means you really need to know the language to a certain level to survive there. Otherwise, because you need it for every single step of your life in France, from going to the grocery, the bus stop, whatever service, the hospital, you need to speak the language. Otherwise, you just end up translating. I will, of course, I'll share my experiences with the language later on, what level of language I was before and after, and how I survived. So when the application is opened in around September, I think to around December, there will be interviews held at a certain date after you've been shortlisted. There will be interviews at the embassy. Usually it's a panel interview, just I think around 3 to 4 interviewers, and some of it is in French, some of it is in English, because you need to show that you can express yourself in both languages. So ours was in both English and French, but for anyone planning to apply, I would suggest you just prepare for both, especially because you've been doing English interviews forever. Make sure you prepare for a French interview, how to introduce yourself, how to, you know, just the general interview questions, know how to answer them in both languages. Then another question I got was, how's the visa process? It was quite simple for us and even previous years, because the embassy does quite a lot for you. First of all, they pay for your visa. All you have to do is have the right documents, and then you go for the visa interview. It lasts less than 5 minutes probably. And because the program is under the embassy, there's not much you're going to answer there. In the interview, they already know what you're going for, so it won't last long. And then after around 2 weeks, you get your visa, and just book your visa date early enough. Before I go on, did I mention it's currently 1 p.m. on August 15th, which is where the Kenyan election presidential results are being announced. And I don't know if you can hear it, but I can hear the tension in my voice. As if we don't already know the winner. I mean, low-key, everybody knows, and we are coming to terms with it. You can already tell which side I'm on. So apparently you have 2 more hours in waiting, because the results are to be announced at 3. Ooh, that's a result. As long as the KCSE, I don't think it'll link with JIV, honestly. All right, so that aside, back to the Q&A. So another question I got was, what did your preparation entail? Good question. Preparation, first of all, just to clarify, in the program, after you're selected and everything, you cater for everything. You cater for your flight, for your accommodation, and all that. It's all up to you. Let me give you guys a short story. When I was selected, I was doing an attachment. That was right after I finished uni. And between the time I finished my attachment to the time I left, I remember reading and watching every French material or moving abroad material I could lay my hands on. For days and days and even months, I was just spending my time watching videos on YouTube about this program, And mind you, I had also done this even before the selection process, before my interview. And it helped. Honestly, I felt like it helped so much in the interview because I felt like I knew the program inside out. And it helped that I already knew people who had done the program. And now, either this is now after when I was after I was selected, I watched so many videos. Like just when I went to YouTube and just searched TAPIF or Assistant de Langue or teaching program in France. And there were so many videos. I mean, there weren't many Kenyan experiences. It's just the Joy Frida one I remember, and I think there was one more. But there's so much information that you can get online about it generally. And another good resource that would be very useful, and another good resource that I would recommend would be the Facebook groups of previous years. Honestly, prior to that, the last time I had used Facebook was like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. But Facebook really comes in handy because every single year the cohort has a group. So there's like TAPIF 2020, TAPIF 2021. There are also academy-specific groups. An academy is like a region. I think I would equate it to a county in Kenya. So my academy is called Academie de Montpellier. So you'll definitely find people formed a group. So you can ask academy-specific questions, which is very useful if you ask me. And another thing about the Facebook group, you'll find this will be a constant in these episodes, the fact that every single question you need to ask, any problem you encounter while in France, there's already somebody who has explained it, especially when it comes to the administrative processes, applying for whatever in housing or medical insurance or whatever, you'll just find somebody has already explained the same thing if you look well. So I think the Facebook group would be the number one source of information. And I would say the Facebook group is number two source of information, because number one, I would give the TAPIF handbook. So the embassy usually gives us handbooks to refer to for every single step, from arrival to settling to setting up a bank account. All that you'll find in the handbook. Just make sure to read your handbook. It comes in handy. So as far as my preparation goes, I feel like I watched and read so much about the experience that I felt like I knew it inside out. I also did look for housing before I left, which is important. Although sometimes it might not really work, because you find most people prefer to get there early and look for housing physically. But it also helps that France has very many websites that you can look for housing remotely online. I think the main one would be Le Bon Coin. I'll link it below. Le Bon Coin is like a Craigslist that has people buying and selling everything that you need. So the thing with Le Bon Coin, you just have to be careful, because obviously there's scammers. I had stories of guys being scammed. You'll hear the stories themselves here on the podcast a few episodes later. But the thing with Le Bon Coin, you also need to, I mean, just you put in the specification for your city and what kind of room you're looking for, what kind of house you're looking for, and also your price range. And then it gives you options, which means you can get to contact the landlords. And after that is when you can actually go physically and view the house, which I found that really useful. I only got to use Le Bon Coin in around December when I was moving to a new accommodation. I'll explain that later. So for my accommodation, when I was browsing through the Montpellier Facebook page, I found some people speaking about host families. There's usually a couple of housing options. You can either choose to be hosted by a family, or you can even do au pairing. Au pairing is a whole different program on its own, where you take care of somebody's kids and they host you. And you can also choose to live alone in a studio apartment. Sometimes a school offers accommodation, so it's a plus for you. If your school offers you accommodation, which you won't know until you ask sometimes, so make sure after you know which schools you selected to go to, make sure to ask if they offer you accommodation. Some schools actually offer for free, but some offer you at a subsidized price, which is still good. So I got guys talking about host families, and I traced one host family back from a time there was an Indian assistant who used to stay there like 5 years ago. And I contacted them and asked if they're still hosting assistants. And luckily they said they were. We got in touch, spoke over a couple of video calls. This experience was very, I don't know, up to today I still have mixed feelings about it, because I honestly didn't enjoy my experience in a host family. Although I would say that there are things I learned about the French culture simply because I lived with a host family. Simply because I lived with a French family. And I would also say, thanks to my host family, my settling was very easy. Opening a bank account, all that. Like, I felt like my settling was much, much easier because I had a host family and I had somebody to guide me through. Although there are things that I wouldn't... Okay, personally, I wouldn't recommend a host family unless you're 100% sure that's what you want. I will share the reasons later. It's a long story. So I had a host family in my city, Perpignan. My city was called Perpignan in Montpellier. And I think, just as a piece of advice to anyone, if you're looking into host families, make sure you have enough calls and make sure you set the, make sure you get to view the room. I think that is one, the biggest red flag I missed from my experience. Because it was so funny because every single time I used to talk to my host dad, he used to say, yes, I just keep forgetting to send you the pictures of the room. It could have been true or not, I don't know, but I never got to see the room. So it was just by faith. He described it. And even the Indian assistant who I talked to had described it. But I wish I had seen the room before because there's no way I would have been paying that much for the room I was in. I stayed in a chambre de bon. That's French for, I don't know what it translates to, but chambre de bon is literally, it's like the room in an attic. You know, it's a tiny room in an attic where usually guys rent out or whatever. And by the size, I mean, okay, the arrangement was okay because they used to let me use their kitchen, their fridge and all that. What else? I could use their TV, anything I needed in the house, I could use for the most part. And it was okay for the most part. But the one thing I wasn't also satisfied with, which I came to learn later, was... Part of it is because I didn't do due diligence before leaving, because what I thought we had agreed was not what I found there. Because, okay, he had told me I'd be paying figure X for rent, but when I got there, I found that the figure was a lot more than I thought. And mind you also have to pay for deposits, you know, which means you have to have sorted yourself with enough money before you leave. So the arrangement I had with this family was that I would be teaching their son English. That's all I would do in there for them. And I would be teaching their son English, and in return, I would be hosted. Although I was still paying rent, which is quite unconventional, because usually when you offer any services, whether it's teaching English or au pair, they don't usually charge you rent. Or even when they do, it's not the full rent. But I used to pay a lot. I used to pay around almost 400 euros rent plus amenities and electricity and all that came to around 370-380. Yeah, that was the rent I used to pay, which was a lot considering I live with a host family when you think about it. Obviously, it goes without saying that bigger cities have more rent. Like, I doubt you can find accommodation with like 300 euros in Paris. It's tricky. Paris is very costly, and you're told that before you leave. If you're selected in Paris, get ready to part with a lot of money for rent. Other bigger cities, like, I think Lyon is not as expensive as Paris, but obviously more expensive than my city, Montpellier. And obviously, if you're living in the city center, you'll pay more, which I was living in the city center, which means I paid more than what I paid when I moved out to a place that was not in the city center. Yeah, so it matters rent. There are so many factors to be considered. When you're looking for information in Loboncoa, make sure to ask the landlord whether the rent that is indicated in Loboncoa caters for your water and electricity, and sometimes is... garbage collection. There's people who also pay for chauffage, especially chauffage. Guys, chauffage is very, very key, because chauffage is a heater, is warming, because you need chauffage especially in winter. It can be quite costly, so make sure all that cost is catered for in the rent. If not, find out how much it is before you decide on a house. Yeah, so house hunting for me was... I mean, I did a lot. I considered all my options, but I ended up choosing a host family, which I don't think I would do this time. I don't plan to do that. Not again. It wasn't the best situation for me. Okay, packing list. Another question I see here is, what did your packing list consist of? What did you pack? I would say, first of all, the most important thing is the documents. Just... make sure you have all your documents in check. Don't make sure you buy a folder or a file just to keep all your documents, just a folder of all your documents. For the most part, you find yourself needing to send copies of certain documents. That would be a birth certificate. You'd also need your contract. You will also need your passport, obviously. There are some, at some point you'll also need, I don't know if this still applies, but during my year, because it was the peak of COVID, we had to get boosters. And when we were traveling, we had to have some documents to show for it. But right now, I mean, you won't need the document as much because you will scan it at some point. There's an app called Tusanti COVID where you have to scan the document that you got when you received your vaccine and then upload it to Tusanti COVID, which you'll be needing when you enter specific places like public spaces. I don't know if that still applies to now, but it's just good to know that. So for the packing list, I think apart from the normal just clothes and shoes, you need to pack for winter because winter is harsh, obviously. Make sure you have enough winter clothes, even if you're in the south. I need to emphasize on that because I didn't know how cold the south could get until I got there. Because you know, everyone thinks that the south is warm. It is significantly warmer than the north, I would say, but it gets cold. And there's also the winds. The south of France, and I think that area of Europe generally, has really violent winds. They're called Mistral winds. Honestly, I have never seen wind that much. You see the wind that has... Do you remember the illustrations that you have in kids' books when they're showing windy weather and they're showing trees falling and stuff like that and umbrellas flying away? That's the kind of wind that was there. It was the kind of wind to even impede you from walking. Honestly, I've never experienced wind like that, and I didn't even know wind like that exists. Oof, it's a lot. So make sure your umbrella is strong enough and buy enough jackets and warm clothes and boots for the winter because you're going to need those. I didn't know how harsh and how long winter was until that time. And if you don't have the right shoes and socks, for the most part, you'll be feeling like your toes will freeze. And it's not a very good feeling because you have to go to work. So another essential item or product that I would say was in my packing list was unga ya ugali. Just flour, guys. this is essential. It goes without saying that you're in a place, you're in a foreign country where you won't easily access unga ya ugali. So it's better to buy here. I don't know how much you want to buy. That's depending on, you know, maybe expiry date and how heavy your luggage will be. Funny story, guys. I love thinking about it now, but back then it was so painful. Honestly, before France, let me just be honest, I didn't rate ugali. I didn't rate it. Like, no, ugali, I find ugali so bland. Even now, I find it so bland. Like, ugali is the kind of meal that needs so much help from the accompaniment. Like, you need unaisa idea sana. You can't just eat ugali alone, honestly. But when I got there, I found myself, after a couple of months of eating French food, and you know what they say about white people food, you know what they say. Honestly, I think the food is quite bland. And if I was to be asked which food I enjoyed in France, I would obviously name food from African restaurants. So it's not French food. Although not, and that's not to say that there's no French food that is good. I just found myself enjoying African food more. So when I was there, after a couple of months of eating French food, I just realized that this is not it, honestly. And I missed home food so much. Thank God for the ugali, the unga ugali I had, because I used to cook ugali on special occasions. For real, like, ugali days were a blast for me. And it's funny I say that now, because before that, nah, man. But unfortunately, because I was using unga ugali for special occasions, I was using it sparingly, I found out that my other packet of ugali had expired. Man, grief. So I had to throw it. If you're listening to this thinking, you should have just eaten it. Honestly, nah, it's not right to eat. And I consulted, so I remember when I posted it on my streaks, guys were saying, I see, just eat it. I kwani, but Z, don't eat expired food. Don't eat expired processed food, guys. It's not right. It wasn't worth it. Imagine now if something happened to me, especially because I didn't even have medical insurance then. Imagine if I had fallen sick just because of eating spoiled unga ya ugali. Honestly, I mean, I was just choosing my battles, right? So, packing list unga ugali. I would also... Oh yeah, in your packing list, I think you might want to pack something like Masai shuka or a, especially a Kenyan flag. A Kenyan flag really helped. Most people don't really think about it, but I remember buying Kenyan flags. It's like 50 bob on the streets or something. Just the tiny one is 50 bob. Last I checked. A Kenyan flag really came in handy in occasions where you need to represent your country, or like in concerts and stuff like that, or any gathering that you would need to show your patriotism or anything. You need a Kenyan flag. I mean, just get a Kenyan flag. Trust me, get it. Another tip about packing is don't pack too many clothes. Just pack what you need. You know that rule about disposing of clothes you don't use? If you haven't worn it for 3 months, you probably don't need it that much, unless it's an essential item of clothing, because chances are you're going to buy a lot of clothes there. And just to make it easy for you when you're traveling, because obviously airlines have their requirements, their weight requirements, and make sure to check with your airline with how many kgs you're allowed on the flight when you're checking in. And also when you're carrying your documents, remember to carry extra passport photos, because you're going to be asked for them a lot at the beginning when you're settling. If you don't, you can still get them there in France, although you'd rather save the money. Right, that's as far as packing goes. I think for packing, the one thing you need to consider is, what is it that you can only get in Kenya, you know? What is it that you're packing that you can't get in France? Because for most things, you can just buy them in France later. But also consider, what is it that you can get in Kenya much, much cheaper than you will get in France? Right, so I'll take you guys through my journey, literally, like the journey, leaving to arrival to all that settling. So I left on the 27th of September last year, which was just a few days after my graduation. You can imagine how many things were going on at that time. Don't be like me, don't do everything last minute. I remember one thing you might need. There are some banks, when you open a bank in France, there are some banks that will ask you for a recommendation from your previous bank. So you might want to get that just in case. There are also some academies that will ask you for your certificate of good conduct. So you need to get that. You might need to get that. And another thing that some people usually forget to do is translating their documents. There are some administrative procedures that will need you to hand in translated copies of your like birth certificate. It's better to do it and not need to have done it than not to do it and need to have done it while you're there. So just go to Alliance Française and get your birth certificate translated into French. Especially for CAF, you will need it for CAF. CAF is government aid for housing. It's government aid for many things, but particularly the one I'm talking about is for housing. So I will talk about that later. It's something that you will need to do when you arrive if you need help with your... Of course, you want subsidies and rent. So it's something that you need to do when you arrive. Just get to apply for CAF. It's the embassy will teach you how to do it in the training. So apply for CAF. It's useful. And the earlier you apply for it, the better. So about my journey. 27th, I left, had one layover in Egypt and arrived in Paris at around 2. I think it helps if you're many Kenyans on the plane. Funny thing is, I think my plane, the day it traveled, we were like maybe 5 Kenyans. Yeah, I think there was 5 Kenyans in my plane. And I remember for the first time in my life, I felt black. You know, you never really realize you're black until you're the only black person in the environment. I mean, you're black, but you don't think about it, you know. So I remember entering the plane and it was just white people. And I'm talking about the plane from Egypt to France, not the plane from Kenya to Egypt. It was a different experience. I remember feeling very confused, like, where are the black people? Because the only black people that were there are the guys that I had come with, like, who are going to do the same program as I was. It was a strange feeling. It was a strange feeling. And I don't think it's a feeling I've gotten used to. Yeah, not completely, honestly. Funny story, when we were in Egypt, we actually got lost in Egypt. layovers. And the layover was only 1 hour 30 minutes. So there we were running around. And I think there was somebody, I think there's just two of us. Don't remember who exactly it was. Who were running around in Egypt with bugs. Getting lost. Mainly because of language barrier, guys. We kept asking the Egyptian guards to show us where the plane going to Paris was, and they kept pointing us in the wrong direction. So either they misunderstood us, or we misunderstood them, or both. Because by the time we got to the plane, like, everybody had sat down and they were ready to leave. But at least we got there. We weren't left by the plane. The confusion at that time. Right now, I look back and I just laugh. But back then, I wanted to cry. Because why am I lost in Egypt? And I don't know how to speak Arabic. Oh, when you're booking your flights, I think it's important to factor in how many hours of layover they are, just in case of a delay. For instance, if you have 1 hour 30 minutes layover and the airport is, I mean, most international airports are huge, really huge. So if you have a layover, just know you don't have time to wait. And please stick with other people. Don't be alone, because you might get lost and you wouldn't know what to do. If I remember correctly, there was no reception. There was no cell phone reception in Egypt. So you couldn't call anyone. You couldn't connect to anything. So there was no way you could ask for directions from your fellow Kenyans, because they're already gone. Just stick with a group. Don't be alone during the layover. Unless you know the airport. Which I doubt you do. So getting to Egypt, fine. Getting on the plane, I think from Egypt to Paris was around 4.5 hours. We got there at around 2. I remember the feeling I got when I finally landed in Paris. Like, it was, initially it was relief. Like, yeah, it was a safe flight and all, we're finally here. And then 2 came, some form of excitement, which was also mixed with confusion. Because first of all, I think, and I've heard it before, I've heard this before in somebody's YouTube video, the fact that you get to France and you see notice everywhere is written in French. I think it's confusing. It's honestly so confusing. Because, I mean, yes, we have been learning French for a bit, but we've stayed in a Kenyan environment so much, you don't realize. You know, it's Kenya. Everything, every billboard, every signpost is either in English or Kiswahili and some bit of Sheng sometimes. But like, when you land there and you realize everything is French, it feels so overwhelming, honestly. And I was so overwhelmed. I was like, what? What if I didn't speak French? Even if you speak French and you understand French, for long as you're not a native, I think your brain goes into some sort of mini shock, seeing and hearing all that French all at once. It's a bit unsettling, I may say so. And the thing about CDG, the airport Charles de Gaulle, it's so huge. Honestly, I took so much time. First of all, lucky for me, I have a cousin in France, so I was meeting, he was the one who was picking me from the airport, thank God, because I don't know how I would have maneuvered honestly on my own. It took us over an hour to meet. Like, we were both in the airport. We were actually video calling and saying, "Ati, let me see where you're standing. What do you see there? We said, are you?" And it took us an hour to just meet. So you can imagine how huge it is. Plus the checking out, immigration offices, passport control, all that took over probably 2 hours to just leave the airport. Yeah, there was so much going on at that time. So I think it's advisable, if you're going to CDG, personally, I would advise you to just land during the day. I can't imagine landing at CDG at night, unless you have somebody picking you up and just maneuvering your way through Paris. If you're landing in Paris, that is. It can be a lot. It can be quite a lot. So I spent the night in Paris, still feeling excited, tired, a bit confused, overwhelmed, obviously. And I think when I landed in France, I think that was the first time it hit me that I'm actually alone, that I'm in a foreign country. I have left everything behind at home. I think that is when the feeling actually hit. Yeah. And I spent the night in Paris and left the next morning via train to go down south. All right. So as I said, my settling was quite smooth. Just landed, was picked, took a train down south. My host family picked me up. It was okay. I've had stories that were much worse than what I had. Like, the guys who really struggled to settle, when I was settling, was okay. Thanks to one, my cousin, and my host family, it was okay. Okay, there's a question about French language. Is the French language spoken in France the same as what you learn in school? Yes and no, because I mean, French is French, it's the same for the most part, except the fact that, you know, even when you tell somebody you're okay, for instance, if a foreigner asks you they want to learn Kiswahili, you can't really tell them to go listen to Kenyans, because we don't really speak textbook Swahili. There's so much altering, there's so much slang, especially the slang. The French that young people speak is not the same French that you find in the textbook, because there's so much slang. It's called verlan or l'argot. It's a bit different. And you also find that they speak a bit faster. Yeah, so you get used to the pace. I mean, at the beginning, it's quite challenging. You keep finding yourself telling people to repeat and that you don't understand. But with time, I promise, with time, you'll get the hang of it. That's why, as I said, B1 is like the minimum level of language required for you to survive. The way the French people speak, there's some things they don't say. For instance, like in French, when you're negating a sentence, you would use ne and pas. For instance, a statement like je vais à l'école, which means I'm going to school, if you're negating it, would say je ne vais pas à l'école. But they don't really say the ne. They would say something like je vais pas à l'école, you know. And you get used to it. At the beginning, it seems like something is missing, but slowly you get used to it. And did I struggle with the language? Was my Kenyan accent understood, and how was it perceived? Good question. So I wouldn't say I really struggled with the language, but I didn't really struggle, because I had a good level of French before I left. I was around B2 before I left. It was okay. It was just okay. Although, obviously, when you go there, they can tell you're a foreigner from the way you speak, because you speak textbook French. You say every word as it is. You don't shorten the words. They can tell you're a foreigner. You're not from there. Would I say my Kenyan accent was understood? I hope so. I think so. It was never a problem. Yeah. Don't be too worried about, or don't be too cautious about your French accent when you go to France, because literally everyone speaks they speak differently. Like, the French is not all the same. It's not uniform. For instance, if you live in the south, places like Marseille or Montpellier or Toulouse, you'll find that, one, the French spoken in the south is very different. It has a there's a particular southern accent that is different from the north, which is also different from how people in the east speak. Like, it just varies depending on where you are. And if the place you'd stay, like where I stayed, there was quite a lot of, I was told they're not Arabs, they're called Maghrebs. The way they speak has so much influence from, say, North Africa, like Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, and stuff like that. And you can spot it from how they speak French. So don't be too worried about how you speak, because everyone literally speaks how they want. It's so different. Same way, you can't expect people who stay in Nakuru to speak like how Coastalians in Kenya speak. It's all different, so that shouldn't be a worry. I forgot to mention this, but when I was doing my preparation to come, I also did listen to quite a lot of French podcasts. Just, to get myself used to the pace of the language, and yeah, it was quite helpful. On matters language also, there are things that I didn't know until I got to France, like how they have the filler words. I mean, every language has its filler words. Like how I see in Kenya, we have things like we, wa, expressions and just filler words. Things like, only a Kenyan would say something like nini, you know. And they're also there in French. So for the French language, you find things like ba, which they say quite a lot. You hear it so much until you get used to it. Ba, it has no meaning per se, but they usually put it before they say oui. For instance, if you ask somebody something and the answer is oui, they would usually just say ba oui. What else? There's words like EUH is the French equivalent of, like when they're talking, they just say, There's also how they use words like, tak, 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 I think it's when, man, I think I forgot something. I think it's when you're explaining something that has steps. So you say tak, tak, tak. And then there was words. I think another word I found interesting was nanani, nanana. There's also filler sounds like, oh yeah, another one is which is the, it's like the when you don't know something. For instance, like I know, normally if you don't know something you'd say je ne sais pas. That would be me. But like most French people, as I said, they don't use a ne. They would say je sais pas. Or to even shorten it further, you would say je sais pas. Or to even shorten it further, you would say pff. So at first, if you don't know what that's about, you'd be so shocked. But then again, you get used to it. Okay, so the next question is, did I ever meet Emily in Paris and any movie stars? Not really. Honestly, no. Because it's not like they stay in Paris. I mean, even when they were filming, I don't think when I was there they were filming. But, and I've not heard of anyone mentioning that they met her particularly, or Omar Sy, who is the lead in Lupin. The closest I have gone to seeing Emily in Paris is going to the cafe in which they shoot, and Gabrielle's cafe, you guys know that, yeah. And it was such a coincidence. It was very coincidental because a friend and I were visiting the Pantheon in Paris, which is a monument where bodies of the great names in the French history are preserved. So I was around that area. My friend had just left and I was around that area. And lucky for me, I usually have saved on my Google Maps. I have starred favorites and have starred places that I would like to visit when I go to a particular place. So when I looked at the map to find my train back home, I saw that the restaurant, Gabrielle's restaurant, was just a walking distance away. I said, why not? Let me go and see. And there was actually guys outside taking photos. It's like, yeah, it's a known thing. And it's an actual restaurant, by the way. There's guys eating there in the restaurant, another restaurant. And they did let us in to see inside. And I don't know why I was expecting to see the actual restaurant that is there in Emily in Paris. It looked very different on the inside, but from the outside you could tell it's the actual restaurant that they filmed the scenes. So that's as far as I got to see or experience Emily in Paris. Okay, about the job, the actual job, what we went there to do and how it was. So you're typically posted in either 1, 2, or 3 schools, but 3 is very rare, which was my case. I had 3 schools that I was posted in. And usually when you're posted to 3 schools or even 2, they're usually not very far from each other. You can manage to commute. Lucky for me, all the 3 schools I was posted to had different dates. Like I used to go to different schools on different days, so it wasn't very hard. And I used to teach at primary level, which is 1D. On the contract it's written 1D elementary. I had 3 schools. I had one school on Monday, another different school on Tuesday afternoon, and Thursday the whole day I had another school. And luckily, I mean, even if you have 3 schools, you still teach the same hours as somebody who teaches 1 school, because it's all 12 hours across the board. A French school is very different from a Kenyan school. There's so many differences. And I think the one difference, I mean, apart from the fact that they don't wear uniform, and like for primary school, they don't go to school on Wednesdays, which is kind of cool. It's like a holiday in the middle of the week. One thing that I noticed is how bold the students were. You know, in a traditional Kenyan school environment, it's like the teacher is in charge and your work as a student is to listen, keep quiet and listen. But in the French system, I noticed that the students were more bold. Like the days where I'd go to class and the students want to suggest what they want to learn. Like they can tell you, can we please do this today? Can we do this activity? Or like if you taught them something, a game or a song, they would want to do it again. And they were not shy from asking questions. Like they could ask so many questions, not just at the beginning where they were curious about you. Throughout, they kept asking so many questions, which was very different from what I'm used to back home. And another thing I found surprising is how sometimes you'd get, not even sometimes, a lot of times you get students raising their hands even when they don't know the answer. Like you'd ask a question and a student would raise their hand. When you pick them to answer, they'll tell you, I don't know, or like, I don't remember. It took some adjusting. Sometimes it can be irritating because, you know, sometimes as a teacher or a teaching assistant, your measure of how much they have understood is by how many kids raise their hand, which is not the case because some kids just raise their hand, you know, for vibes. I don't know why they do that. Maybe they're just taught to. I really don't know. I can't figure it out, but there was that. How was I received in the school? How was the reception? Usually, when you get your contract, you also get assigned to somebody who will be in charge of you. So whether if you're in primary, most times it's a conseiller pédagogique or a CP. And if you're in secondary, you get a prof référent. And these are the people who are in charge of your stay. They will welcome you to the school, to the country sometimes. Sometimes they can even offer you accommodation, whether it's temporary, while you look for a house. Or they can even help you, give you accommodation options. This person is your point of contact in France. So my conseiller pédagogique was a guy called Monsieur Jean-Claude. And he was really helpful. He really helped me with settling and stuff. And all matters relating to administrative procedures, telling me which documents I needed to send to where and stuff like that. So I remember, okay, so when you get your contract or your email, you'd be sent an email, a contact email. Like if you have three schools like me, I had all the three emails. So I wrote to them and introduce yourself, say when you're coming, probably ask some questions like what to expect, how many classes you'll be handling, the size of the class and stuff like that. So I got, they all replied telling me when they would want to meet me, when I should go to school. Because usually the program starts in October 1st, but it really just depends on when the school wants to see you, you know. And luckily for me, in my three schools, all the teachers knew that I was coming and they knew what to expect. But sometimes you'd get some schools that have never had a language assistant before, so they don't know where to place you in their schedule. It can be very confusing because I remember in the group, in the WhatsApp group that we have for this year, there was guys who, like even a month into the program, were still saying they do nothing because their teachers don't know how to handle a language assistant. It happens, yeah. Usually the prof référent have their own handbook, same way us language assistants have our own handbook. For the teaching experience, there's so much to say, and I'll definitely have a separate episode for this to share my lessons and my experiences with the kids and how noble a profession teaching is and how it felt very special, I would say, and a huge responsibility to be able to impact the lives of young kids like that in that kind of way. So stay tuned for that episode. For this particular episode, I don't want it to be too long because it's just the first episode. As I mentioned earlier, the subsequent episodes from today will be featuring various guests who did the same program, and they'll be sharing their one-on-one experiences with you guys, and I hope you enjoy them. Lastly, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode even half as much as I enjoyed making it, and I hope you learned a thing or two. If you did, remember to share it with a fellow Francophile, and remember to follow us on all podcast streaming platforms. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your experience on the same, feel free to reach out to me. My Instagram handle is Tarret. Yeah, see you in the next episode of the Kenyan Francophile. Cheers, bye, au revoir.